Hi, this is Faith Mitchell, President of Grantmakers in Health. I'd like to welcome you to the latest edition in GIH's podcast series. Our goal is to provide you with an insider's view of what's happening on the front lines of health by hearing from leaders in the field. I hope you enjoy these podcasts and find them insightful as you lead your philanthropic work. I'm Faith Mitchell, the President and CEO of Grantmakers in Health, and I'm pleased to be speaking today with Dr. Richard Besser, the President and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Rich, I'm really pleased to meet you, finally, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your plans at RWJF.
Great to be here with you. It has been a while. I've been looking forward to meeting you as well.
I wanted to start by asking you, given your past roles at ABC News and the CDC, tell us some about how you decided to enter into philanthropy.
When I look at my career trajectory, it strikes me that philanthropy was a good place for me to end up after my other experiences. I'm a general pediatrician, but I spent most of my career in public health at the CDC and really loved the role that governmental agencies had in improving population health. I then went from there to ABC News, which my friends in public health thought was a really wacky career move. But to me, it was an extension or a different shape of how I was approaching public health, using communication as a way to try and shape how people viewed health and give people information to make healthier decisions. And I enjoyed that experience. But one of the things that I missed at ABC was working at an organization where the mission, the values, the passion were in line with my own. You know, there's something about working at ABC where you can have impact because you're working across. You're working with an organization where the mission is different. And so when you find a common point, you can have real impact. But what you lose is that passion coming into work every day of a group of people who are kindred spirits, who are working to try and improve the lives of people in this country and around the world. After about 8 years at ABC, I was looking for my next challenge. And I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go back into governmental public health, whether I wanted to go to academia or to a foundation. And then I heard that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was recruiting a new head, and it struck me as a dream job. I'd encountered the foundation. I'd been funded by the foundation when I was at CDC. And it struck me that here was an opportunity to look at public health from yet another lens and think about how do you use philanthropic dollars? What's the sweet spot there that's different from what we could do in the government to try and improve people's lives? I've been here less than a year, and I don't regret a minute of it.
Fantastic. And what went through my mind was that you don't have as much money as CDC, but you get to do whatever you want, basically.
Yeah, it's really interesting that way. One of the things that I felt very strongly at CDC was this strong accountability to Congress and to the public. These were public dollars we were spending. We had to justify everything internally to the agency. And then as I moved up in the agency, we would have to justify to Congress what we were doing. At ABC, we had our ratings. And so we had to justify to management what stories we wanted to do and whether people would tune in to see them. But at philanthropy, here at the foundation, it's really different. There is a freedom to take risk that is very different than I've experienced anywhere else in my career. Our accountability is to ourselves and to our board and to an extent to the American public because of the tax advantages we have in philanthropy. But it's much softer. You're not needing to go and say, here is this deep evidence base that what we want to do is going to have this impact. We can say, this makes a lot of sense. This is what the smartest people in the field think is the best approach or a promising approach to a challenging problem. Let's give it a try. And not just give it a try, but let's stick with it for 10, 20 years and see whether it's going to make a difference. That's an incredible privilege and an incredible responsibility.
It really is a very special sector. I've worked in two foundations myself, and they were extraordinary experiences. It really is a privilege, as you're saying. So you've been here not quite a year, as you were saying. Tell us some more about how you're spending your first year. You're about two-thirds of the way through, I suppose, and I'm interested in hearing about what some of your immediate goals were and then what some of your longer-term goals are.
I find in every job I've had, every organization I've worked in, there's been a rhythm and a cycle. I'm not quite through the full year cycle here at the foundation. When I arrived, what I said I wanted to do was hurry up and listen. And I think it's really important, especially when you're entering into a new field, to spend a lot of time listening. There's so much expertise. There are people who've been working in this field for decades. And I want to get a sense from them, what are the particular levers that we have in philanthropy? How do we have the biggest impact? What things are we doing that folks think, well, maybe that's not working so well? Or what things are we doing that, please, don't change, keep doing that? I get that by listening to people inside the foundation, as well as listening to our partners, our grantees, and others who look at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation as a leader in health philanthropy and want to make sure that we maintain that position and help move forward on the issues that the field thinks are really important.
So which health issues would you say are top of mind for you these days?
When I look at our vision of building a culture of health in America, I think it's spot on because so much of the work that I was doing in governmental public health was dealing with the problems after they'd already occurred. And what we're looking at in terms of building a culture of health is creating the circumstances, the opportunities for people to lead healthier lives, changing how America thinks about health. For so many people, health is, did I get my annual checkup with the doctor? Did they find anything? Is there anything that they're telling me to do differently? But when you think about what truly drives someone's health and their well-being and their longevity and their mortality, access to healthcare is important. It accounts for about 20% of overall health, but that leaves 80% to things about where you live, where you work, where your kids go to school, and whether they have a place to play. And if, as a philanthropy, we're not looking at those upstream factors, you know, in the field, we call them social determinants of health, which is a term that the general public doesn't know, but it means all of those things. Do your children go to a school where they're getting a good education, where they're going to be fed a healthy meal and they're going to learn how to use their bodies? Do you have a well-paying job that's going to allow you to have a safe place to live and healthy food on the table and time in your day to get out and use your body? Those things are so critically important to health, they're really hard to have an impact on. But as a foundation, that's where we're really putting our money and our efforts to say, how do we change that? How do we create communities that promote health? How do we create a world, our country, in which children are growing up and have the opportunity to lead healthy lives? We're very interested in early childhood and the changes and the important things that are going on in a child's physical, social, and emotional development during that period. We're critically interested in training the group of leaders who are going to ensure that our country is moving in the right direction in terms of health. And that means not just the traditional leaders that we have trained over the course of our 40 years, you know, the doctors and nurses, but we're expanded our leadership programs to include economists and anthropologists and people who are involved in city planning so that we're working with all of these sectors that have an important role to play in health. And overlaying all of this is a lens of health equity. And by that, we mean ensuring that everyone in America has a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. And that's the lens that covers all of our work. We were founded with a focus on the most vulnerable, and that's something that we're going to continue.
Terrific. Just to zero in, you mentioned early childhood. I'm really interested in your perspective as a pediatrician about some of the priorities that funders might have related to children's health, because there are a lot of foundations that are focusing on that area.
It's so critically important. We're learning more and more about early brain development and the importance that has over the whole life trajectory. I am a clinical pediatrician, and during my 8 years in New York, I worked in a community clinic. And most of the kids there, I would say 80%, were in the foster care system. And I would hear story after story of the experiences that these kids had early in life, witnessing violence, being in a home where they weren't certain that there was going to be food on the table at night, being in a neighborhood where it wasn't safe to go outside and play. These kind of experiences, these adverse childhood experiences, affect brain development. They affect long-term health. And if we're not starting very early in life, by the time a child even starts kindergarten, they're already playing behind the eight ball. They don't have the same opportunity to lead a healthy life. They're more likely to have emotional difficulties. They're going to have challenges in dealing with some of the situations that would allow them to be successful in school. And if you're not successful in school, it's really hard to be successful in life. So here at the foundation, we've had a big focus over more than 10 years on childhood obesity, but we're trying to frame that within the context of overall child and family health. Is a child being given what they need for physical, emotional, and social development? Are we supporting their families in a way that will allow those children to thrive? Those are areas that we're very interested in.
That's terrific. And I know that's going to be of interest to a lot of funders all across the country. Also looping back, you mentioned the Culture of Health, of course, and I know that the Culture of Health Prize winners were recently announced and that you had an opportunity to visit some of those communities across the country. So I'm interested in what you might have seen in those communities that was particularly inspiring, and also some of your thoughts about kind of the work that lies ahead in that area.
It's really exciting. The Culture of Health Prize recognizes communities around the country that are really coming together to create the situation where health will thrive. I had the opportunity in October to go to one of the communities that was being recognized. It was in Allen County, Kansas, rural Kansas. The county itself, I think, had a population of less than 15,000 people. And I came there and made the announcement that they were winners, and they just went wild. The town square was full of children from the school and from the community who had all been working to improve life in this rural community. Their focus wasn't exclusively on health. In fact, the main thing that was bringing them together initially was around economic development. How do they keep jobs in the community? As they worked on that and worked on how do you make this county more livable, they were really working on building a culture of health, and all of the factors that they were working on, jobs, training, bringing a supermarket to their little town. They didn't have a supermarket. I went to the site where one was being constructed and I said, how did you get a supermarket here? And they said, well, we called the company that ran these size supermarkets in a number of towns, and we told them we really wanted them to come. And there was a gentleman there from the company. I said, why'd you come? He said, well, they called us. And they wanted us. And it meant something to us that this community really wanted us to be there. So even though it was a small community, just banding together and creating a situation where there was town spirit meant a lot. There was an old cement factory that had been abandoned and environmentally was not safe for development. Well, they turned the area around that cement development into walking trails and biking trails that has made the community more livable, has made it more healthy, and has helped them recruit professionals to the town as a place to live. It was very exciting to see, and it was also exciting to see how they had come to recognize that what they were doing in economic development was really building a culture of health.
I think that's very interesting. In fact, I was about to ask you about that. Did they see what they were doing as being health-related or economic development? And it's interesting that they're making the connection themselves, because I think that's crucial. And it may well be that people in their everyday lives make those connections in ways that some of us who are more removed, you know, in public health and other fields, don't make them ourselves. Yeah. You know, we have things all divided up, but in life, everything is mingled.
I think in public health, we have to be willing to let people come to it from whatever angle they want to. In November, I visited the Eastlake development in Atlanta. It was a public housing project with very high rates of violence, where they have created a model of mixed income housing, built an incredible school, recruited the YN, and have developed a thriving neighborhood that is improving economic development throughout that broader area. In talking to them, they said they had been going through this economic development for over 10 years and had been resistant to the idea that what they were doing had anything to do with health. And it wasn't until more than 10 years into it that they were recognizing that the people who lived there were healthier. And they were very proud then to claim that this was a health project. But when I was walking through there with a group and we went down to the elementary school, there was a whole group of kids outside playing in a program that Playworks was running. And the person from the community who was showing us around says, well, what do you notice? Someone said, well, the kids are all happy. And someone said, well, what else? Someone said, well, racially diverse. I said, well, what else? Someone said, nothing. Why? She said, are any of them overweight? And we said, no. And she said, do you want to know what our anti-obesity program is? I said, yeah, what is it? She says, we don't have one. And I said, well, what do you mean you don't have one? They said, we don't have one. We've found that by creating a neighborhood that's livable, by providing healthy food, by providing schools where kids are learning, by providing all of these things, they're creating the circumstances where children are healthy. And they were doing it not by saying we are targeting obesity, but by targeting health more broadly and targeting the broad view of health of children, social, emotional, and physical.
That's an amazing story. Going back to how foundations can be effective in their communities and thinking also about your observations in your first year in philanthropy, I am interested in your kind of impressions of the overall field. You mentioned some things that you like that foundations do. Do you have advice for fellow funders about ways they might, say, take more risks or other things that they might do? Because that's actually part of Grantmakers in Health's mission. And through this podcast, you know, we're happy to share some of your thoughts on that point.
I'm very new to the field. I want to be very careful in terms of giving much in the way of advice. But one of the things that I think it is important in any field, and philanthropy for sure, is that a field can become insular and can develop a language that is exclusionary. And I think in philanthropy, we have to be careful of that. Just as in journalism and in governmental public health, you can end up in a situation where you're talking to yourselves and you all know what you mean, but the communities in which you're working, where you really want to have an impact, aren't quite so sure of what you're talking about. There's the concept of co-creation that I think is critically important and something we're focused on trying to do a better job of. How do you engage in communities so that you're addressing the issues and the problems that they see and you're trying the solutions that they know will make their communities healthier? It can be very easy to come in with an ivory tower kind of approach of, well, we've read the literature and we know what's going to work here. Here's the solution that we want to put forward, and we've got the dollars to drive it, and you'll find that people will go along. But if you really engage and listen, you may come up with solutions that are much more effective.
And I could imagine being a national foundation that co-creation task is particularly challenging for RWJF because we have funding partners at Grantmakers in Health who are, say, the only funder in town, you know, the only one in a city or a county. And so they're very closely connected with the people that live there. But when you have that national or even international perspective, what are some of the things that you do to make those connections with communities?
That's such an important issue. You want to identify, well, who is it that knows this community best? As a national funder, we don't want to be the one coming down to an individual community and saying, here's the way it's supposed to be. We have funding that is helping pull local funders together to help them learn how to work together better and come up with common objectives and means of moving policy forward that maybe will improve the lives of people in their communities. That's the kind of work that we want to do is say, well, what can we as a national funder do to ensure that local funders are as effective as they can be in their communities? How can we help them learn from what other funders may be doing all the way across the country? That's a unique role for a national funder.
Rich, one of the issues that health funders across the country are very concerned about is health equity. Many of them have made it their top priority, and I'm interested in hearing some of your thoughts about that issue.
When you look at what we're trying to do in creating a culture of health, you can't even think about that without using a lens of health equity. And by health equity, we mean, does everyone have a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being? Well, clearly that's not the case right now. And we want to make sure going forward that all of the work we do is focused on equity and ensuring that those who have the least opportunity are having more, that everyone in America is growing up with that opportunity to lead their healthiest life. It's what I want for my kids. It's what every parent wants for their kids. It's what we all should expect from our society.
Do you expect that to lead to new areas of grant making? Or is it more of a sustained emphasis in existing grant making?
I would expect that it's going to lead to new areas, as well as a reflection on all the work that we're doing to ensure that equity is being considered there. It goes from what communities we're working in, as well as what funders are we funding? Who are we funding to do research? Are we ensuring in our leadership training programs that we're training people from underrepresented communities to be able to become the leaders of the future? That's all part of equity, and it's something we are passionately committed to.
I feel strongly that RWJF can be an important voice on this issue because although many funders are already active, others are maybe considering it, and the leadership that you could show in that regard would be very important to them. And one of my particular points is even definitional. Like, what are we talking about when we talk about equity? Because people are still trying to sort that out. And so I encourage you even to get involved at that level, helping people understand what the goals are and how you accomplish those goals, because whatever you do can ripple out throughout all the hundreds of foundations in the country.
It is very challenging. And when you think about how you talk about health equity, there are ways of talking about it that really resonate with broad American values, and there are ways of talking about equity that can be very divisive. And what we're looking for is a way to talk about equity and engage in equity that really pulls us all together as a country and says, yes, this is something that we should all be working towards. And I think that can be done.
Rich, my last question has to do with the role of philanthropy going forward. Now, again, I realize you're new to philanthropy, you're gathering your thoughts, but one of the things we've been doing in our 35th anniversary year is asking current and past board members about the challenges to the field and are there things that funders should be looking at that they aren't, or basically any thoughts that they might have. And so as we wind up, I invite you to share any thoughts that you haven't already about where you see health philanthropy going, say, in the next 5 or 10 years.
I think that there are a number of trends in this country that are concerning. One of the things that worries me from my experience in journalism, but also just my experience as a citizen, is some of the distrust of science and of factual information. And I think those of us who work in health philanthropy have an opportunity, and I think a responsibility, to be some of those voices that people look to for trusted nonpartisan information. Facts. What is it that is leading to generational poverty and generational deficits in health? What are the potential solutions? And if we can help bridge some of the partisan divide that's going on in this country and look for common solutions, we're going to be able to have much more impact than we could if we stay silent. It's a challenge and it's a new area, but I think that the public is hungry for voices that they can trust, voices in our communities, voices of real lived experience, and voices of philanthropies who have been working for a long time to improve health in this country. I think that it's both an opportunity and a responsibility, and one that I'm really excited about.
I agree with you. And it's something that we've tried to develop in the last few years at GIH, is to help amplify the voices of health funders from around the country and encourage them to speak up in just the way you're saying, because they're trusted organizations. They are seen as being, you know, neutral players, that phrase that we use all the time. And they are working actively to improve lives in communities, so they have enormous credibility. And I think many times funders could be even more influential than they are already, not necessarily through dollars, but through these other things, like using their voices with issues.
I think that Grant Makers in Health has played a really important role in organizing the community of funders in health. And we've been really proud to support the work that you've done since the beginning. I look forward to meeting other funders in health and getting to know Grantmakers in Health more than I do now. I know that my colleagues who are very involved in Grantmakers in Health have found it to be an incredible experience. And it's so important that we learn from each other so that we can increase our impact in this country.
Absolutely. We're very grateful to that group of RWJF program officers who got together at that Nathan's on I-95 and said, we need a national organization for health funders.
Yeah.
That was Terry Keenan, I guess, and some others. And they were, you know, very far-seeing, and they were absolutely spot on in terms of what would help develop a field from what had been isolated funders. So we're really pleased in that respect, not only for RWJ's being there at the creation, literally, but then having worked with the foundation over the years and all of the things that we've done together and look forward to doing in the future.
Well, we greatly appreciate the partnership and the friendship and the mutual respect and learning.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. For more information about Grantmakers in Health, visit us online at gih.org.